lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Last episode, we're just going to jump right in here. I got a couple tweets mentioning the fact that I said a naughty word. I owned up to it. I did indeed drop a audible F-bomb last week when you were reading off those list of Ticat injuries. And I think most people were just surprised that you weren't the first one to curse because of how rambunctious you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely me that decided to be the first one on the podcast to curse.
Well, sometimes it comes out. It's all good. It rhymed with duck.
It did indeed rhyme with duck. And a word that has duck in it, terrible segue, but we're going to use it anyway. This past week, I don't know if you listen to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm sure you do. Drew Edwards was on there talking about how he was making a bunch of predictions and was not necessarily harsh, but he wasn't exactly complimentary of of how the Riders would do this year. And I tweeted at him making a joke that him and I share the something in common, which is the hate of Rider Nation. And a Rider fan posted a list of people who are on the Saskatchewan most hated list. John Cornish was on there. A couple other players. It was pretty funny. My name was on there, of course, probably due to a certain blog post I wrote a few months back. I'm just super flattered that a fan base would hate me as much as they do. I'm honored. It means they really truly do hate me.
Yeah, they're a sensitive bunch over there in Rider Nation, aren't they?
Maybe we can get you on that list soon. You got to make some defamatory comments about those wheat heads.
I'm not on the list just because of my association with you.
No, surprisingly, your name wasn't on there. I guess that picture of you last year that you sent out wearing a Rider jersey has curried you some favor over in Melonhead country. Never, ever do that again.
No.
Last week, we also made some bold predictions. Yours was a bust. You said Hamilton would beat Calgary, and as we'll get into later, that obviously didn't happen. It was close, though. You must have been on the edge of your seat thinking, holy crap, I got this one right.
I know. I thought I was right for once, but, they've found a way to lose that game.
Yeah. Mine was that Brandon Banks would score 10 return touchdowns this year. Obviously, he didn't do that in the first game, but he did score one, so... one down, nine to go, 17 more games. Looking pretty good so far.
Yeah, you still got a lot of time to meet that expectation. So I think it was the first time he touched the ball on a punt return. So that was pretty good.
I think it was the first time he touched the ball all season. I don't think he'd seen it on offense yet either. So
no.
One touch, one touchdown. I'll take it.
Yeah.
So I put out a call on Twitter and to some of our listeners for their bold predictions, and I got a few back. Most of them, actually all of them, were on Twitter. So I'm going to throw them out and see what you have to think about them. At Stadneck said that both the East and West Division finals will be hosted by different teams this year, meaning he doesn't think that Hamilton or Calgary will win the their respective divisions.
I'd have to disagree with that one, actually. I think that both of them are going to be atop the divisions this year again.
And I should mention that all of these came in before the week's games, so yeah. I'm looking at this thinking he probably thought Edmonton would win, which I'm sure if asked now, he would probably take it back, seeing as Riley is out. Again, something we'll get into later. So that I need that to be known that this is all, these all came in before week one kicked off. The next one, our buddy Joe at USFL Tecmo, he said that BC will play four quarterbacks this year, one of which is not currently on the roster.
That's interesting. Lule might go down because he has a tendency to get injured, but I don't know about four. I think they'd be in a lot of trouble if that happened.
Four is an awful lot of quarterbacks to start in one season.
Yes.
I don't even know if a team has ever started four. I can't think any off the top of my head. I'm sure one of our stat guys, which we don't have, will be able to find this out for us. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure if they'll play four. Three, maybe. I could see, again, with Lule's health, you're probably looking at a guy who could miss some time. I hope not, because I'm a big fan.
That's a bold prediction, for sure.
Well, that is bold. At TXA2002 said that there will be 50,000 fans in the stands in Edmonton for the Labor Day rematch.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, they always get a good crowd for the Labor Day rematch. That's not too bold. I could, if they both have good records, I could see if it's an important game, I could see 50,000 there.
I think a lot will depend on how Edmonton does now without Riley, who's out for an undetermined amount of time. If they're still a top team, I think that one is very doable. At Vernie365 said that both of our bold predictions will be wrong. He's already half right.
Yes.
But we still have a full season minus one game to go to see if I hit the nail on the head. Our buddy Jason, the sob guy at TigerStripe72, this to me was a, this might be been the boldest of all the predictions. Ray gets his walking papers by Labor Day. And again, yeah, this came in before Trevor Harris lit it up against Edmonton. So this to me was just, this was shocking.
Yeah. Like maybe if Harris has like an amazing 4, 5, 6 games before Ray gets back and Barker decides, you know what, I'm going to cut bait with Ray because he's getting up there in age and take on this younger quarterback that looks promising. But yeah, I still don't see that happening.
A lot would have to happen for that to come to fruition for me too. The Argos would have to almost be undefeated. Harris would have to be in the conversation for MOP.
Yeah.
Just because I'm sure that with all the quarterback injuries that happened this week, they would find a willing trade partner, but I don't see them just releasing him outright.
No, yeah, I could see a trade, like maybe in to BC or something if Ule goes down and they're not sure about their backups. But yeah, I don't see them just outright releasing him, that's for sure.
No, but if that happens, old Jason should probably have bought a lottery ticket, because that came out of left field.
Yeah, he pat himself on the back for that one. If that happens.
We got two more, and again, like I said, these came in before the season started, and they both have to do with Dan LeFevre winning the starting job in Montreal. Obviously, that's not going to happen now because he is out for the season, and that's sort of where we'll start with the news of the week. Man, those quarterback injuries were far, far too many, in my opinion. Just we lost Durant for the year on a very innocuous play that he ruptured his Achilles tendon on. We don't know how long Riley's going to be out after getting nailed in the knee. The Owls lost both Jonathan Crompton and Dan LeFevre, and yesterday it was reported that Crompton's going to go on the 6-game injured list. And not a quarterback, but Swayze Waters also injured his quad, forcing former Hamilton Tigercat Dave Stahl into some place kicking and punting duties. Just a terrible week for some all-star players.
Yeah, the assumption was that with the new rules, the defensive backs not being able to harass the receivers as much after 5 yards, that the quarterbacks would, you know, be able to get the ball off quicker and they wouldn't get hurt as much. But 3 in 1 week is, or 4 actually, because Dan LeFevre too, the backup from Montreal. It's not good to see, because the quality of football drops if the starters aren't in. So it's I don't like seeing that at all.
No, me neither. I want to see the best players out there. As I predicted last week on the show, I said Mike Riley would be not just an MOP candidate, but would be MOP. So when he went down, I mean, I'm not surprised. The guy gets hurt all the time, and it's just an unfortunate sort of break for the guy. Like, he's a great player, and like it must be devastating for him every year to just never be able to play a full season. Because if he ever was to string 18 games together, we would be talking about him as the best quarterback in the CFL, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the injury really looked ugly. I mean, his knee bent the wrong way, and it was they said he's out indefinitely. They haven't said for the season or not, but I'm not sure if he's going to be back this year at all.
No, when I saw it happen, it reminded me a lot of Tom Brady's knee injury about 6 or 8 years ago. They were playing the Chiefs the year after they finished the regular season undefeated, and Bernard Pollard came in the first game and hit him low, which wasn't illegal at the time. And the same thing sort of happened. His knee just bent, and that was it. I believe it was his ACL was torn, and he was gone for the year. So I'm hoping that's not what happened with Riley, but man, oh man, did that it looks like it's torn knee ligaments. And I'm assuming the only reason they don't know is because a lot of times you have to wait for swelling to go down before you can actually take a look at the injury. So I'm just assuming that thing's swollen to the size of a basketball, and they legitimately just don't know.
Yeah, but the Duran injury was just crazy. I mean, he just jumped in the air a little bit and landed on his feet, and just messed up his knee bad. I mean,
yeah, yes, pop, pop. There goes his Achilles. Like,
yeah, someone thought that everyone thought that someone stepped on him or something at first, and then you saw the replay and like nothing happened. He just jumped up in the air a little bit and messed it up.
Yeah, there were a lot of tweets from players, Ty Cat players, because I follow a lot of Ty Cat players on Twitter, obviously, and a lot of them were saying, "Man, that looks like an Achilles. That looks like an Achilles." And then other people were saying, "No, no, no. If it was an Achilles, he'd be writhing in pain." And lo and behold, when the diagnosis comes out, ruptured Achilles, he's done for the season. And this just is it the curse of Kevin Glenn just rearing its head again? Like, he comes into Hamilton and Quinton Porter gets hurt and Glenn takes over. And then he gets traded to Calgary and Drew Tate gets hurt and Glenn takes over. And then the next year, after Glenn gets him to a Grey Cup, they start Tate again and Tate gets hurt again and Glenn takes over. And then he goes to BC and Travis Lule's recovery doesn't work out, so Glenn starts pretty much every game there last year. And I figured because Durant was suffered a season-end injury last year, there was no way it was going to happen again. And less than a half into the first game, pop, there goes the Achilles, and the Riders are riding Kevin Glenn. Like,
yeah,
no matter where he goes, it seems that he just becomes the starting quarterback.
Yeah, once again, he's the starting quarterback in the league. I mean, he keeps getting chance after chance to get that Grey Cup ring, but I don't know if he's going to be able to do it this year with the Riders. I don't know that that's the team that he gets the ring with, but...
Well, you know, I'm a big Kevin Glenn fan,
yeah.
And I didn't think the Riders were going to be very good with Durant. And as much as I like Kevin Glenn, at this stage of the game, Durant is a more dynamic player. So if I didn't think the Riders were going to be very good with Durant, I don't think they're going to be much better with Glenn. Although Glenn seems to have this ability to take teams that might not be very good and will them to at least 500 records. Like, when he took over in Hamilton, the Ticats were coming off a bunch of crappy years, and he becomes a starter and they, you know, magically start making the playoffs and pretty much have made the playoffs ever since. It's maybe he's sort of like he's got the curse on the starting quarterback that he signs with, but then he's got some magic touch during the regular season. So maybe the Riders might not be in such a bad position.
Yeah, he's definitely it's good to have, because without him, I mean, who would be starting now for the Riders? You got, I mean, Tino would maybe still be there. Actually, I heard Tino is actually coming back now because of the injury to Durant. But I mean, they'd have, I don't know who they'd have behind him if Glenn wasn't there. So it's always a good insurance policy, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you completely. Because of all the injuries to the quarterbacks, the Swayze Waters injury is going a little bit unreported. He was magnificent last year as a place kicker and a punter. And you saw in the game, I'm sure you watched because it was a regular season football game and we have nothing else to do. They need to find someone to handle those duties because their punting was mediocre and they missed a really short field goal. Now, obviously, Dave Stahl is not a kicker, but I haven't heard anything about the Argos bringing someone in, so maybe Waters' injury isn't as bad as it looked, because like a quad injury for a kicker seems to me like it would be pretty devastating.
Yeah, they can't have Stella back there doing punts and field goals. I mean, he did all right for like not being a kicker, but maybe the Ticats signed Hugh O'Neill just to screw over the Argos.
Oh, yeah.
Take him off the market.
Yeah, so, or maybe Paul McCallum is headed to Toronto. I don't think he's ever played for the Argos. So, all right, so let's move on. We'll talk a little bit about the games that happened this week. Not the Ticat game, obviously. We're going to get into that in detail later. Man, road teams really showed up, eh? Yeah. If you want, like, I don't count the Argos as a home team. They're playing in Alberta, for crying out loud. I don't care what the schedule says. They were on the road more than the Eskimos were. And Ottawa went into Montreal and won. Winnipeg went into Saskatchewan and won. Just road teams sort of came to play in week one of the CFL regular season.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting batch of games. Some better than the others. Do you want to go through like each game individually?
Sure.
You want to start with the Edmonton Toronto one?
Sure. What is there something you like to talk about from that one?
One thing I noticed that the crowd was awfully pitiful, but I don't know, like, I watched the preseason game in Fort Mac there before, and it seemed like there was a lot more people at the preseason game than the regular season game, but I don't know what happened there. Did you hear anything about, like, why tickets didn't sell?
I had seen some complaints about how the Eskimos weren't really promoting the game. And some were saying, oh, it's because they're not going to see any of the gate receipts. They're not making any money off the game, which, I'm sorry, that's hogwash. Hamilton promotes buying tickets to go see the Argos, and the Ticats don't make any money off, you know, me driving down to Toronto to see a game. So I think what's good for each individual team is good for the league, and I think the Eskimos should have done their part and promoted the game more heavily to their fan base. That's the only sort of thing that I've been able to piece together, is that Edmonton just didn't promote. They relied on the Argos to promote the game, and the Argos barely promote their games in Toronto. So
yeah,
promoting their game to a bunch of people who pretty much aren't Argo fans, I expected that crowd to be pretty small. But under 5,000, though, that's really sad.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing. Looked pretty bad on TV, but
the stadium looked pretty good, though. Like,
oh, yeah, stadium's a nice little stadium.
Yeah, sure. It is.
I was really impressed with Harris, that's for sure. You know, he had 24 for 27, 347 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, I didn't expect that against the Eskimos defense.
No, absolutely not. Completely agree with you. I was impressed with Brandon Whitaker.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, yeah.
It must have been, couldn't have been a production thing or anything like that as to why Montreal let him go. It had to have been money related, because his performance against Edmonton was spectacular.
Yeah, over 100 yards rushing. He had that long TD catch.
Yep.
So, really good pickup by the Argos, it seems, anyways, in the first week.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe they're going to be better than I think. It was 1 week, but we'll see.
Yeah. The Eskimos, you know, they looked average at best, really.
Yeah, I couldn't really get a read on them, to be honest with you. They didn't look like the team they did last year, and it was surprising. They looked out of sync. Kenny Stafford is looking like he's going to be a really good number two receiver in Edmonton, though. He was matched up with A.J. Jefferson pretty much all game, and while I'd say it was a pretty even battle, Stafford made some plays against Jefferson, and it was a nice little battle between the two of them.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on Nichols, the starting quarterback now? Like, do you think that he has a lot of potential? Do you have a lot of faith in him, or what's your feelings on him?
We've only really ever seen him play against Calgary, so it's kind of hard to get a read. He was very highly touted a few years ago as the possible future starting quarterback of the Eskimos before they got Mike Riley. So he's looked a little scattershot in the games I've seen him play. But if he shows the type of skill that Edmonton saw that required them to retain him for all these years, maybe Edmonton's not going to be as dire straits as I think they are, because Riley's a dynamic player, but that Edmonton offense has got some playmakers on it. So I'm not sure if Nichols is going to be the type of guy that's going to lead them to 12 or 13 wins, but maybe if he plays sort of a game manager role, which is usually a pretty dirty word when discussing quarterbacks, just tries to limit turnovers, I think Edmonton might be okay.
He's been around the team for a long time, so hopefully he just does his thing, and the Eskimos can be respectable this year. I got the I'm gonna write down like how many penalties in each game for every game this year. So there was 42 penalties in the Edmonton Toronto game.
Oh, do you know how many yards?
Ooh, no, I didn't get that.
We'll have to look that up. But 42 penalties?
Yeah.
Holy crap!
Yeah. All right. Well, safe to say, you know, impressive win for Toronto. And we'll see how it goes from there for the Argos. You want to move on to the Winnipeg-Saskatchewan game?
Absolutely.
All right. So, obviously, the big story is Drouin of the year, but we already touched on that. I was impressed with Willie. You know, 22 for 25, 325 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
I think the big thing for Winnipeg was they went out and tried to solidify that offensive line, and in watching that game, Willie had a lot of time, was able to step in and make a lot of throws. I said Winnipeg would be vastly improved this year, and based off game one going into Regina and beating the Riders, they hadn't done that in 10 years. So I was impressed by Winnipeg's game all around. I thought their defense played really well. I thought their offense was clicking. They had a run game. The only negative to Winnipeg was that they gave up over 200 yards rushing, 212 yards to be exact. So teams with good running backs might be able to limit their success. But other than that, Winnipeg gets a big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, they look good. The only exception was the against the run. As you said, I mean, Allen had 102 yards and then Messam had 75. So it kind of looked like Winnipeg's defense last year, but hopefully they can improve on that. You know, they got a new defensive coordinator in there, so no more Etcheverry with his wild schemes. You know, Nick Moore had a great game for the Bombers, 94 yards and a touchdown. So he was the big free agent signing last year. So I think he might have a bigger year this year than he did last year.
And if he does, like if he can get clicking, Clarence Denmark is already an established guy there. If they can get both those guys running on all cylinders and you got Willie back there with all the time in the pocket, that Winnipeg offense could be pretty dynamic. Their run game was especially awesome with both Paris Cotton and that Marshall kid, Cameron Marshall, I think his name is something like that.
Yeah, I believe so.
They were cutting hard. They were finding holes. They were hit. I was just really impressed all around with the Winnipeg offense.
Yeah, good win for Winnipeg. A great game to watch on TV for sure. 28 penalties in that one.
Well, that's still a lot, but a hell of a lot less than 42.
Yeah, I mean, the penalties in the Edmonton-Toronto game seemed like it was every other play. So, okay, Ottawa-Montreal. QB injuries, obviously.
Yeah, but this was a bit of a snoozer in the first half, don't you think?
Yeah, it was. It picked up in the second half, but the first half was pretty damn boring.
It was two and outs and turnovers, and I think Whitburst have three interceptions in the first half. I don't know what Rick Campbell and that coaching staff said to the players at halftime, but whatever they said, it worked. So, like, kudos for Ottawa for finally winning a road game, their first in franchise history. But yeah, that was a little tough to watch. But you're right, the second half was pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, it was good. Interesting that Brandon Bridge got his first start and his first game appearing in the CFL. You know, the Canadian quarterback. He looked okay. I thought he, I don't know, some of his passes were kind of wobbly, but he completed some passes, moved the sticks, had one interception, but you know, he looked okay, not terrific.
Impressed might be too big of a word to use when discussing Bridge's performance, but for a guy who was the third string quarterback going in, saw limited reps in practice heading into the game, going 5 for 10 for 62 yards or something along those lines, you can't really ask for much more for a guy going in cold. You're right, though. He was errant on some throws. There were a couple misses there. He had the interception. The knock on him coming out was that his mechanics weren't great. His footwork wasn't great, and I think that was on display against Ottawa. But, man, does the kid have an arm, and he's got some moxie. And I think if that coaching staff in Montreal, which has Turk Schonert as the offensive coordinator and Anthony Calvillo, I know he's like receivers coach, but there's no way he's not working with quarterbacks as well. If those guys can work their magic, and I think they both can, they could turn Brandon Bridge into a starting quarterback in the CFL. I saw some things out of him that makes me think that he can play and play at a high level in this league.
Yeah, I hope you're right on that. Have they signed any other quarterbacks to bring in since
one of the quarterbacks they cut in training camp, the name escapes me. But they're bringing him back. I'm not sure what else they're doing because they also had Rakeem Cato on the practice roster, so he's been obviously moved up to the main roster. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing someone else back, but they haven't signed a veteran or anything like that, so I don't know if they're going to. Maybe they see the writing on the wall and go, like, let's develop some of these guys. You know, they got a veteran receiving core with Lewis and Stamps and Green, and those guys catch don't drop a lot of passes. So, you know, maybe letting these young guys play and develop over a season where the expectations won't be so high anymore might not be a bad thing, instead of bringing in like a journeyman quarterback to try to right the ship for the rest of the year.
Yeah, bring back Kerry Joseph.
Oh God. Yeah. Or even worse, Michael Bishop.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you did see that Casey Printers reached out to Saskatchewan, so maybe he'll reach out to Montreal.
I heard that. I didn't know how credible the source was on that.
It was he tweeted it out. It was his tweet. Hey, Ryder Nathan, I see you need a quarterback. My body's ready. I can come in. So who knows? I really liked Casey Printers. Like, I know he only had the 1 year, but man, he was really exciting. And I know that was 11 years ago, but still, let's see Printers back in the CFL. I'd love it.
It'd be interesting for sure. I
mean, absolutely.
How old is he?
Maybe
like mid-30s, early 30s.
Yeah, probably 34, 35 would be my guess.
Yeah.
We could look it up on Wikipedia if we really wanted to, but let's just throw out wild guesses and say 35.
Okay. Yeah, so I just wonder who's going to be the starter next week for Montreal.
They haven't announced. If it's Bridge, that's a huge piece of news. Like,
yeah,
first Canadian quarterback to start since, what, 96, I think?
Nevada?
Yes, in BC.
Yeah.
So, like, that would be huge. I guess we'll know later in the week. Once Montreal starts practicing, we're going to probably find out who their starter is going to be.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment, the Montreal West kicker, Bidet, he played for the Rougier. This kid has a huge leg on him.
He did miss the extra point.
Yes, that's true. He's had trouble with the field goals, I think. But, 51 yards per punt. Is a pretty good average.
It's sure looking like Sean White is on the outs. Maybe there's a trade to be had with Toronto or something along those lines, because if Toronto needs a kicker, Sean White's a pretty good kicker. But yeah, it definitely looks like Montreal's going young at the kicking position.
Yeah. Okay, 23 penalties in that one.
Yeah, I feel like we got to talk a little bit about Ottawa. Like, they won the game. We spent all this time talking about the Owls.
Yeah, that's true.
It's weird, though, because they mostly didn't look great and kind of just inched their way back into it. The one thing that I thought was impeccable on their part was the last drive of the game, where they ate up yards, ate up clock, methodically drove down the field and just killed all the time. It was actually a thing of beauty, to be honest with you. The way Burris ran that 3-minute offense to seal that game, it was definitely not the Ottawa team of last year, where they would have gone 2 and out and punted, and Montreal would have found a way to come down and score. I was really impressed with that final drive by the Red Blacks.
Yeah, Burris and Walker really took the time off the clock there and sealed the win. I was also very impressed with that. Ernest Jackson looked really good for them. Had a bunch of catches. Probably looked the best out of all the new receivers they had. Williams had flashes. I mean, he had a lot of catches too.
He got rocked on one of those. I think it was on the last drive, maybe the second to last drive. He got lit up and bounced off and like stood up and went back. Like, for a little guy, we all know what he's like here. He's a tough cookie, but yeah, that was quite the hit he took. And I actually think he played pretty well for a guy being away. He doesn't look like he's got any rust on him. He doesn't look like he's going through the motions like some guys do when they come back from the NFL. It was a bit of a slow start for him a little bit. But Jackson just seemed to be Burris's favorite target all night. Like, it was just throw after throw after throw after throw to Jackson. But I think Williams, as soon as he gets a little bit more comfortable, I think he's going to explode, much to the chagrin of Ticat fans everywhere.
Yeah, every time they punt to him, I kind of hold my breath, just like I'm just waiting for something incredible to happen. And he had flashes on the punt returns, but like nothing huge, but you could tell that he still has it. But like on that play that he got hit super hard, that was a really impressive, how he got that first down. He kind of danced around and it was a huge first down for Ottawa. So I think he's going to have a big year again.
I'm thinking my prediction of the Red Blacks making the playoffs is doesn't look so silly after week one.
No, not after week one, but it's only week one.
That's true. Did you notice, this is something that I kind of picked up on, did you notice there was a lot of push-offs from receivers? Some called, some not called, but it's one of those things where I know when they would show replays of like long bomb passes and stuff like that, it seemed to me like the receivers had their hands on the defensive backs. And my understanding is that the 5-yard no touch rule applies to both the offense and the defense. And I know Bakari Grant got called for a massive push off penalty, which absolutely was a push off. Like he shoved the guy to the ground. But I noticed it in the Edmonton-Toronto game. A long pass. I can't remember. It might have been one of the touchdown passes. But there was a shove off there. It just seemed to me like receivers were pushing off a lot. Did you happen to notice anything like that?
Yeah, I saw it in a couple games. I think most of the time they're going to get called for that. You know, they want the offense to go up this year, but you're right that it's the 5-yard rule is on both the defense and the offense. So if receivers think they're going to get away with that, I think they're mistaken.
Yeah, and my understanding is coaches will send video to the refs going like, we saw this. What is the interpretation of this? Should this not have been a foul? So on and so forth. So maybe we might see a little more in the way of push-off penalties in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, I noticed one thing that I noticed the first week of the season is there's pretty much a penalty on every punt return or kick return.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, like, you're going to get caught if you hold or you have an illegal block. You're going to get caught, so you just might as well not do it. And it's so frustrating. Like, every punt return, every kick return, there's a penalty, it seems.
It did seem that way.
Stop doing that, please.
You listen to Mike. He knows what he's talking about.
Annoying me.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about the other three games?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, all right. Before we move on to talking about the Ticats, I want to touch on the TSN Top 50 list. They released this after we recorded last week, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I'm going to be blunt. Bo Levi Mitchell is number one as a joke. Mm. I think he's a great player, but he is not the best player on his own team, let alone in the league. Not after one season. That was a knee-jerk reaction to a guy winning a Grey Cup and winning Grey Cup MVP. Just no. No, 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 no. And Ticat fans who have been tweeting at me or have been talking about how Milt Stegall put Zach Collaros at number one, no. Zach Collaros is not the best player in the CFL either. These are both great players, top 10 players probably in my opinion. They're not number one. John Cornish is the best player in the league, hands down.
Yeah, I wouldn't put Mitchell or Collaros at number one. I mean, I think you'd have to have a couple, you know, good years in the league to be number one, not just one. So, yeah, Mitchell and Collaros at number one doesn't make sense to me at all. But I would agree with you that Cornish should be number one or number two. You could argue maybe Alamimian should be number one because he's had
a couple
good years.
And he was MOP last year. Sure, I wouldn't have been surprised if they voted him as the top player in the league. I just think what Cornish has done the last 3 years, how he hasn't been number one on this list to me is kind of astounding, to be honest with you. I know it's a list, and like I'm not getting too up in arms about it. It's meant for discussion. It's meant for fodder. People who take it too seriously are a bit nuts, but it just seems weird that he's the best Canadian player the last 3 years. He has an MOP to his resume, and he's not the number one player in the league. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. I thought that Simone Lawrence should have been a bit higher on the list too. I think he was like 32 or something.
Yeah, he was in the early to mid 30s.
Yeah, I could have seen him like top 20 or top 25.
All right. One last thing, though, before we move on to the game, because I don't want to stay on this too long, but I want to apologize to Ryder fans everywhere. Last year, the list came out, and Ricky Ray was number one, and Ryder fans all over the country were, how is Ricky Ray number one? He played half a season. The Riders won the Grey Cup. It should be Darian Durant. It should be Darian Durant. And I said, just because you win a Grey Cup doesn't mean you deserve to be listed as the top player in the league. But last year was the only year that a player from a Grey Cup winning squad was not number one. The first year they did it, Calvillo was number one. The following year, it was Lule. The year after that, for some completely unknown reason, It was the crying Hawaiian himself, Chad Owens, which let's not even get into the fact that he has never been the number one player in the CFL at any time in his career. That was an absolute joke of a pick. And then Mitchell this year. So I understand. I didn't think Durant was the best player in the league going into last year. I would have picked Ray as well. But I can understand the frustration of Rider fans who, yeah, okay, we can say that they're favored or whatever, and people get mad at them and all that. And I've said my things about them in the past, but they were spot on. Durant probably should have been number one on that list. If you look at all the guys, every other number one has been the Grey Cup champion going into the season, except for Darian Durant. It was very strange.
There you go, Rider fans. You should ease up on Josh. You know?
Yeah, maybe take me off that hate list. I said something nice about you.
There you go.
Now, I do wonder, would Corey Sheets have been number one on that list last year if he had stayed in the CFL? Maybe that's where the sort of the splitting of the hairs came, is people thought Sheets was more of the reason that Saskatchewan won that championship than Durant was. I don't know.
He could have been, because if he would have stayed healthy, the year that in 2013, if he didn't get injured for those couple of games, he might have hit 2,000 yards rushing. So if he would have stayed healthy last year, maybe he would have been number one.
Yeah. All right. So enough of all the silliness. Let's get into the Ticats' loss in Calgary to the Stampeders on a last play field goal.
Mm.
Oh, what could have been, eh?
Mm. Heartbreaking.
So I wrote down some things that I liked, some things I didn't like. I did similar in my game review for Three Down Nation, but let's get some of your thoughts. What are some of the things that stood out to you in this game on last Friday?
Johnny Sears, he stood out. Two interceptions. I didn't know if he was going to start for them or not, if he's going to be the starting lineup, but he looked spectacular. Just really stood out in the defense that game for sure.
Absolutely. I picked him as my defensive player of the week. I think when the CFL announces their players of the week awards, three tackles, two interceptions, a quarterback sack, and a defensive touchdown. You can't do much more as a defender than that.
Yeah. The offense looked not very good in the first half. I know Claros is famous for that, slow starts and then finishes strong, but that needs to get better as the season goes on. You know, it just wasn't impressive in the first half.
No, not really. I thought Claros, for the most part, with the exception of pretty much one throw, a terrible double pump clutch interception that went all the way to the house, I thought Caleros looked good. Opened the game, completing his first 10 passes. I ended up 27 of 38 for 281 yards. Like, that's not a bad day for a starting quarterback. But yeah, you're right. The offense seemed to look out of sync, and once again, no success in the red zone and no running game to speak of. Those things are going to hurt.
Yeah.
You can't settle for field goals or even worse, throw interceptions that get returned for touchdowns when you're inside the 20.
Yeah, that interception still bothers me. I mean, the double clutch, and then he stared down the receiver the whole time. And
yeah, it seemed like a weird, like, it looked like it was a timing route, like a quick hitter, and why he would pump, I don't know. It was off to me, and when he threw it, I was thinking, well, at best, this is going to be an incompletion. Like, this is, and it wasn't even going to, it's not like it was in the end zone. Like, it was a weird sort of like 2 yard button hook. Like, it was just a weird play call.
Yeah. I mean, such a long throw for like short yardage. I didn't understand it, but anyways, and on that, I mean, the drive, they were doing so well. They were moving the ball so well. I thought that, okay, this is where they score the touchdown, and maybe we can get something rolling and get another touchdown. But it really swung the momentum the other way with that long interception touchdown.
They score there. They put that game away, as far as I'm concerned. They put it in there. It's 25-10. They had driven the field on that drive. So that to me would have been the icing on the cake. I know Calgary was a good team. They just didn't seem to really have it on Friday. So a touchdown there would have that we would be talking about the Ticats being 1-0, and instead we're talking about them being 0-1.
Yeah, I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about in this game. I thought that right at the end of the game where we punted the ball to Calgary with, like, I don't know, 40 seconds left or something, I thought that the play call where they went deep to Grant was kind of curious.
I was just about to mention play calling, so continue.
Yeah, I thought that they should have got a little closer, you know, kicked the field goal. We would have been up by 4. You know, then Calgary has to move down the field, score a touchdown. And even after the play where they didn't get the long pass to Grant, I still think they should have went for the field goal. It's 50 yards, yes, but Medlock has the leg. He has the accuracy. They have to trust in this guy. Let him kick that field goal. Get them up by 4. Makes Calgary score a touchdown.
Yeah, it did seem during the game that the wind going in the direction that the Ticats were going at in the fourth quarter was a bit like was blowing in their face. I know that the talking heads during the game said that the wind didn't look so strong because it wasn't blowing, but you could tell on punts and kicks that the wind was blowing one way, not the other. Just play calling in general was really suspect in this game, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you talk about the pass to Grant on second down when you're trying to kill the clock, essentially. Maybe try that on first down. Maybe that's your first down throw, and you're like, okay, we didn't get it. Let's see if we can get 7 yards here, maybe move closer for a field goal or what have you. Even just take time off the clock. It was curious all around, just like on like the last drive. They had so much success pressuring Mitchell. They sacked him 4 times. They had pressured him into 3 interceptions. Mitchell's first 3-interception game of his career, by the way. And then with the game on the line, it's 3rd and 17. You call off the dogs. I get that you have 9 guys back. You shouldn't be able to give up a big play, but then Jeff Fuller makes an amazing catch and they pick up 28 yards and then boom, game over.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think people have been picking on Gainey a lot this week, but, and you know, rightfully so in some senses, but I think that Fuller just played spectacular. I mean, some of those catches, I mean, Gainey was right there. I think it was great coverage. I think just Fuller just made amazing catches all through the game.
I have been a big fan of Jeff Fuller's since I first saw him play. I saw he's a big body. He's a tall dude. He's got hand. I figured if he ever could stay healthy, injuries seemed to be his problem, that he would be an impact player. And you're right. He just made some beautiful catches. Like, Gainey was all over him in certain situations, and Fuller just grabbed it out of the air. Like, it was sometimes, you know, you can have the perfect coverage and you still get beat. It happens. Yeah, I don't think Ed Gainey played a great game. He definitely didn't live up to Delvin Bro's reputation, which he never was going to. Delvin Bro was a once-in-a-generation guy. But, yeah, just a lot of the mistakes Gainey made were just Fuller making great, great plays. But still, on 3rd and 17, you have 3 guys rush the quarterback, give him all the time in the world to make a pass. At least bring 4. Like, it didn't make any sense. It was, that to me was maybe the most egregious call of the game.
Yeah, he's been successful on blitzes all game long. I mean, all the sacks came from either the linebackers or the secondary, so they've been confusing Mitchell all game long. You know, bring someone, like you said, at least get 4 on the defensive line rushing, but you know, we're not coaches, so we can't make those calls. But
that's true.
I just couldn't believe on 3rd and 17 they converted that. It was just kick in the butt right there.
Yeah, it was. So do you think John Cornish was a decoy in this one too, or do you think he's finally going to admit that maybe the Ticats know how to defend him? He had a great yards per carry. He had 13 rushes for 70 yards, but pretty much a non-factor most of the game, no?
Yeah, I think that Ticats have his number. You know, they know how to contain him pretty well, so I don't think he was a decoy, and I don't think he was a decoy in the Grey Cup game, but, you know, he can think whatever he wants.
Speaking of, he mentioned, I don't know if it was during the pregame or if it was during the game when they do, you know how sometimes they do those split screens where they talk to a player? Yeah. But he said he was unhappy with his performance in the Grey Cup, and it stood out to me because I was sitting there watching the game with my brother, and I screamed, I thought he was a decoy in the Grey Cup. If you're a decoy, then you shouldn't be upset with your performance. Like, and my brother was asleep and didn't hear me, so I was essentially talking to myself. But the point still stands. You can't come out 7 months later and go, oh, I'm really disappointed with how I played, when immediately after the game you're like, oh, no, that was part of the game plan. I wasn't supposed to be getting the ball much. No. They didn't do anything to stop me. I stopped myself.
Yeah, he's changed his story a little bit there now, isn't he?
I'm kind of starting to see why Ryder fans think he's a bit of an a-hole, to be honest with you. He just, if it doesn't make him look good, he kind of deflects things. I don't know. I used to really like him. I still think he's a great player, but he's starting to creep up into that Ricky Foley, Chad Owens territory for me, to be honest with you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yikes, that's harsh. That's harsh.
No.
Hey. Maybe you're giving another Ryder, you know.
Maybe once they listen to this, they'll get off my back.
I thought Fantu's had a huge game. I thought he played excellent. Were you scared as I was when he went down, the injury scare there?
Yep, because, like I said, I was sitting watching the game with my brother, and he made a very, very astute observation. He goes, man, Fantuz is having a hell of a game. This is usually about time when he gets hurt. And then not two plays later, they lob up that pass to him, and he gets lit up, and it was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Because it looked like he was out, like concussion or something. So to see him come back in the game and to play as well as he did, I was happy for him because this guy needs a big season. I want him to have a big season. If he has a big season, the Ticats are going to win a lot of football games. But yeah, I was the heart skipped a beat, and I lost a little bit of breath when he got lit up there for sure.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I still think that he's the best Canadian receiver in the league, you know, when he's healthy. So we need Fantuz in there with his big mitts catching balls.
And I think, you know, the one thing that has sort of the overall ending of this game that has sort of been heartening for me is I haven't seen a lot of the sky is falling sort of comments from Ticat fans that you usually see after a loss, especially a close loss. It's been mostly, hey, you know what? We went in there, we competed, things didn't go our way. This is a game that the Ticats could have won. And we did it without a bunch of guys. You know, no Luke Tasker, no CJ Gable or Nick Grigsby, no Eric Norwood, no Rico Murray. It was very nice to finally see people put things in perspective. Usually that's not the case with Ticat fans. They're like, we lost, we're crap, that's it, we're going to lose every game this year and never win it. Like, I was very happy to see that no one really sort of jumped off the bandwagon, so to speak.
I think most of the fans realize that we have a good team here and this is just game one, so. Yeah, it sucks that we lost, but there's still plenty to go. And like you said, there's tons of injuries. You know, the starting O-line wasn't intact. So once we get all those pieces together, I think that we will be one of the best teams in the league. Yeah. So I think that people are just, you know, confident this year.
Yeah, I think if they would have been shellacked, if this would have been another 31-10 outing like the previous season opener in Saskatchewan last year, I think maybe people would have been a little more vitriolic in their displeasure, but I think it being a 1-point loss and, like, you know, we've discussed all these injuries that the team have that make me curse quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think like obviously this team is talented. especially now with the injury sustained to the Owls quarterbacks, and this is still the team to beat in the East as far as I'm concerned.
You know, only the Ticats can lose a game when the other team has five turnovers and we have one. I mean, how does that happen?
And they get a punt return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And an interception for a touchdown. Like, it's a classic Ticat loss. They do everything they can to win and still find a way to lose.
Yeah, it just shows that the offense has to score touchdowns.
Yeah.
Field goals are not going to do it.
No. You're right.
Field goals and speedy B returning punt returns is not enough. You need touchdowns from the offense.
I think we're going to see a few of those this week in Winnipeg, though.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's going to happen too.
That was a segue, buddy. Like, we got to move on.
All right.
So let's talk about this week's upcoming game. The Ticats are still in Calgary. They decide to stay out there the week before they head to Winnipeg to open week two for the entire league on Thursday night. I think we could see a quarterback duel in this one. We talked about it before. Caleros was 27 of 38 for 281 yards, completed his first 10 passes, and Willie was 22 of 25 for 325 and had 3 TDs. I think these guys could be throwing the ball over the yard on Thursday.
Yeah, it could be a high-scoring affair. I'm excited that the game's on Thursday, so we don't have to wait till like Saturday or Sunday. So I'm happy about that. The preseason game they played against Winnipeg, they played them really well. I know that's preseason, but hopefully they can have another great outing against Winnipeg in Winnipeg.
Yeah, Caleros in that game was 14 of 17, so yeah. He seems to have. Everyone was talking about going into the season that he would be more comfortable in the offense, and it looks like he's completing passes, like he's making the right decisions. He's quicker in his reads. He could carve up this Winnipeg defense. I think Willie could do the same. Like I said, I think this is going to be a high-scoring quarterback duel. These guys are going to go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, and I don't think Paris Cotton's going to have the game that he did against Saskatchewan, because I think that the Ticats' run defense is much, much better.
Completely agree. The run game, that'll be interesting to see for the Ticats, though. Like we discussed earlier, Winnipeg allowed 212 yards rushing. And I know Ray Hawley is not Anthony Allen or Jerome Messam, but he did have a pretty decent game against them in the preseason against their starting most of their starting defense. So maybe if they get the run game going, it'll open things up for Caleros. And like, I see a lot of positives in the favor of the Ticats going into this one. Not that I think Winnipeg is a walkover. They looked great in week one, but I think the Ticats will match up fairly well with this Winnipeg team.
Yeah, I agree. Is there, like, Grigsby's not going to be back for this game? Or
No Grigsby, no Gable, no Murray, no Tasker. None of them are in Calgary. None of them are practicing. So it looks like essentially the squad that went to Calgary will be going to Winnipeg.
All right, well, you know, Hawley didn't look spectacular last week, but I think he'll do all right against Winnipeg. I think that he has some talent, and he started off pretty good against Calgary. He had 2 catches right off the bat, but he didn't get many touches in the running game, so maybe he gets more this game.
Yeah, I just want the Ticats to establish any sort of running attack. Just give me something. They need that. Like, obviously, Caleros, it didn't really bother him that much because he had a really good game completion-wise and yards-wise against Calgary, but just imagine how good he could be if that running game was considered a threat.
Yeah. I mean, Austin doesn't really like to run the ball too much, but I think that he realizes that you have to get that run game going, especially later in the season. So I think that they'll see the ball handed off to the running back more and more this season, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I'm also kind of looking to see how Hamilton's offensive line plays against Winnipeg's defensive line. The Cats gave up 3 sacks against Calgary, and sure, two of those, I believe, were to Charleston Hughes, who looks like he looks like he's going to have a huge bounce back season after being injured most of last year. But the Bombers, on the other hand, didn't get a sack on Durant or Glenn in the first week. So, you know, they brought in Westerman from the NFL, and he was supposed to be their big sort of sack guy. And maybe he's still taking his time adjusting to the Canadian game after being in the NFL for so long. So maybe this is the type of game where the Cats, where their offensive line can sort of gel as a unit and hopefully, you know, keep Caleros clean and open up some holes for, like we said, that running attack to get going.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a little bit shaky at the start of the Calgary game, but I thought that they improved throughout the game. So hopefully Claris isn't on his backside a lot, because we can't afford him to get injured. Even though I think we have pretty good depth at quarterback, last thing I want is Crompton.
Crompton? No, the last thing I want in Hamilton, period, is Crompton. I don't want him anywhere near this team.
No. Last thing I want is Caleros to be on the injured list. So, yeah, hopefully we see a lot of good things out of the offensive line this week.
Yeah, I'm also curious about the defensive line. They, you know, three sacks against now they didn't get the sacks, but it was four sacks against Calgary, but they plugged holes, allowed linebackers and safeties to get in there and defensive backs to make some nice plays. And Winnipeg's offensive line looked fantastic, as we talked about before, against the Riders. They only allowed that one sack early in the game, but John Chick's going to get those. No matter how good you are, John Chick at some point is going to beat you and probably get a sack. That's mm-hmm. just that good. So that'll be an interesting battle. The two lines versus the two lines, I think that's where this game is going to be won, and that's where the focus should be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm pumped for this game to start, actually.
Yeah, you got anything else you want to touch upon?
Curious to see if Banks scores another touchdown on a punt return, see if we can get one a game.
Well, I made my prediction to start the season, so I'm not going to just make Brandon Banks predictions, but I think we should tell everyone, we decided we're going to do one bold prediction each a game. So this is not my bold prediction. That'll come in a few minutes when we get to that. But I'm going to say, yeah, he's going to score I'm going to mark it down. We're going to put it on the board. I'm saying he's going to return a kick or a punt for a touchdown this one.
Ooh,
I'm saying he's doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Banks return touchdown. Okay.
All right, you got it.
So it's in the record book.
All right. It's on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's get to, I think we've covered quite a bit of what we're looking for in this game. So let's get to the bold predictions. What is your bold prediction for Hamilton at Winnipeg?
Caleros has 300 yards passing, three touchdowns, and no interceptions.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Oh. I guess I will make Brandon Banks will return a touchdown, my bold prediction, because my bold prediction is, and we need to let everyone know, we do not discuss this beforehand. I told Mike, let's do bold predictions for a game, and he's like, that's a great idea. So we go off on our own, we make our own predictions, we come back. Here's the one I wrote down. Zach Caleros will throw for over 400 yards.
Oh, wow.
And three touchdowns with no interceptions. So I went a little bit higher than you, but it's essentially the same prediction. So I will give you the Caleros one. I will take my bold prediction, even though I just said a few minutes ago that it would not be my bold prediction. My bold prediction is that Brandon Banks will return a punt, kickoff, missed field goal. In some special teams way, Brandon Banks scores a touchdown against Winnipeg.
It's not that bold, Josh. Not that bold.
Well, you stole my bold. What am I supposed to do? I you want me to come up with one out of whole cloth? I can't do that.
How about this? Kick return touchdowns.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's absolutely ludicrous. Okay, how about this? Andy Fantuz catches 10 passes, has over 100 yards receiving, and two touchdowns.
Okay, that's bold.
That bold?
That's bold.
Is that bold enough for you?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So get off my back.
All right.
Were you a Rider fan?
Yeah, maybe. All right, let's dive into the questions now, shall we?
Twitter questions, let's get them.
All right. At Canes Eagles wants to know, what are your three keys to beating Winnipeg Thursday?
Ooh, you want to take this one first?
Yeah, sure. You got to get Claris out of score touchdowns in the red zone, number one. Pressure Willie, number two. And develop a run game, number three.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I would have said. So I'm going to say dominate along the line of scrimmage, both on offense and defense. That is a key. They need to keep Caleros upright. They need to make a pocket for him. That is the only thing I would probably add to sort of the keys to the game. But you're right. Establish a run game, absolutely. And what was the first one you said? Oh, score in the red zone. Duh. Yeah, so no use in me answering those because you answered them for me.
All right. Next one comes from TXA2002. If Ken Austin were a vegetable, what kind of vegetable would he be?
You told me this before the show, and it's been on my mind since we started. What kind of vegetable would he be? Oh, man. You know what? He'd be a beet because he gets so angry that sometimes he turns purple and wants to beat you. So there we go. Ken Austin is a goddamn beat.
There you go. Mine's a cayenne pepper because he's always spicy on the sidelines.
He is very. He is muy, muy, muy caliente.
Exactly.
That's a little Spanish for all our Hispanic listeners out there, which I'm pretty sure we do have. I think we have some people who listen in South America. I'm sure they speak English, but maybe they speak a little Espanola.
All right, next one comes from our buddy USFL Tecmo. Is Toronto now a threat, or is it too early to tell?
Too early to tell. I don't like to make too many knee-jerk reactions. Granted, I did put Toronto at number one in my power rankings this week because I was super impressed with what they did on both offense and defense against Winnipeg. Jesus. Man, we're making mistakes all over the place today. Against Edmonton. But no, I don't know if I would call them a threat. Is Ottawa a threat because they beat Montreal? Yeah. I still could they make the playoffs? Sure. But Hamilton is still the team to beat in the East as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's just way too early to tell. It's only one game, so you know they could be. But we'll find out. We'll find out as the season goes along. If I'm interested to see if Harris has a repeat performance next week. So,
yeah, I'm not exactly a believer in Trevor Harris just yet. There's very little game film on him. He had the one start against Ottawa in what was a meaningless game for the Red Blacks last year in Week 20. He looked fantastic against Edmonton, but it's a small body of work. I want to see if he can sustain it over a longer period of time. And he's going to get a great test this week. He's got to go into Saskatchewan and play the Riders. And you got to believe they'll be frothing at the mouth. Those rabid fans will be after that loss to Winnipeg in week one. So if the Argos offensive line is going to have to be stellar again, because that defensive front in Saskatchewan is pretty darn good. And if John Chick gets that motor going, it could be a long day for the Boatmen.
Yeah. All right. At Scott Charleston wants to know, what do you make of the Hugh O'Neill signing? I think it's maybe they weren't. I thought that Medlock punted pretty well last week, actually. But I'm assuming it's just for punting duties.
Yeah, I would agree. Punting duties and a precautionary measure.
Yeah.
If better to get him now. And if Medlock, you know, knock on wood, gets hurt, then you already have the guy in-house to be able to replace him. But, yeah, I think it's – if they're going to replace Medlock's punting, which they could – O'Neill's a pretty good punter. He's not a great place kicker, but Medlock doesn't need – Medlock is maybe the best in the league. So, I'm with you. It's either punting or, like I said, a precautionary measure just in case. Break in case of. You know what I mean?
Yeah. At TXA 2002, he has a couple questions this week. Is Holly as bad as his performance, or was it just a very good run defense doing what it always does?
I don't think he's as bad as I don't think he's bad at all. It was just Hamilton doesn't run the football. That's the name of the game. You know what I mean? Like they just don't do it. So he wasn't given a ton of opportunities to run, and yeah, the holes weren't there, and he did look a little jittery, but. I don't know. If he doesn't have a decent-ish performance against the Bombers this week, then I think we can start to wonder if maybe he was a flash in the pan in the preseason.
Yeah, I'm going to say that he didn't get a lot of touches, and the Calgary's defense is very good. So a combination of those two things. And the last one from TXA 2002, this is on the Cleon Lang hit on Riley. Do you think it's possible to accidentally injure a player in three consecutive games against him?
Once is an accident, twice is a trend or something. Or I can't remember how the saying goes. I'm going to George Bush this and just screw it up anyway. It seems almost unbelievable that in three consecutive meetings that the same player could knock the other same player out, don't you think?
Yeah, it's definitely questionable.
And I know
he said he was pushed from behind, but I haven't seen any evidence of that. So
yeah, and I've heard his defenders say, yeah, it looked like he was shoved. But even if he was shoved, there's a way to avoid doing that. And he's a big boy. He knows what his body can do. I'm not going to say it was malicious and he had the intent to injure him, but he does tend to play with a little bit of he plays on the edge. I think he's been fined previously for dirty hits. So I don't know if he necessarily has it out for Mike Riley as opposed to anyone else. I think he's just a dirty player. And he's a good player, but he seems to have that sort of that Khalif Mitchell type attitude. Like, remember when we saw Khalif Mitchell nearly rip Simeon Rotier's arm out of its socket?
Yes.
This wasn't as bad as that, but I feel like it's sort of the same thing. He plays on that edge, and I don't know. I know I just said he was dirty. I hate to label a player dirty, but three times in three meetings is it's unbelievable, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'd have quite the hate on for Cleon Lang if I was an Eskimos fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe it wasn't intentional, but I don't think he did anything to stop it, you know, like sliding with his knees. So
yep. And I believe he was flagged on the play too.
Yeah,
like, you can't hit a quarterback like that. You know that. So why even bother? Like, yeah, he can say that he was pushed, but I don't know. It's kind of hard. It's hard to buy. I don't know. It's just hard to buy.
Yeah, it's so hard. You know, you can't get inside the player's mind, but when it happens that many times, it's hard to believe that it was just, you know, it's just coincidence.
Yeah, it's like what's his name that used to play for the Bombers and the Riders and the Argos? Kowale would always hit someone in the head. Like, he knocked out Buck Pierce once. He was a walking 15-yard penalty. So I don't know. Maybe Lang is built the same way. I don't know.
Anyways, that does it for the questions.
All right. Well, I guess that means we're done for the week. Solid show, pal. I was really happy with how we did today. We're going to pat ourselves on the back. We're Barry Horowitz. So, as always...
I don't know how many people are going to get that reference.
Well, you know what? We're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah.
So, as always, you can subscribe on iTunes, leave a comment, give us a rating, you know, just tell us we're two idiots who don't know what we're doing, whatever. It's up to you.
That's cool.
If you want your questions read on air like we just did, you can hit Mike up. Give him your Twitter handle, buddy.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can hit me up, and you can find me at JoshSmith_82. Or you can leave your question in the comment section of the post that will go up on 3 Down Nation when the podcast is ready to go. So that's it for Podski Weeby this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Eat them raw.